Dana Lash's Absurd Truth Podcast, sponsored by Kel-Tec.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
I feel like this goes into a headspace with regards to like super serious gaming than I ever wanted to go into. So I just really quickly, there's this story where this one gamer who's, Kane, you're going to love his name, Moist Critical.
Oh, yeah, it's Charlie. I know Charlie.
Yeah, claims that he was in this case, Billy Mitchell versus Carl Jobst, and they actually had him passing gas on camera, used as evidence in this court case.
What?
For real. He testified against this guy named Billy Mitchell in an ongoing court case, and it included footage of him blowing his own horn, so to speak, on camera, used as evidence. And we can't play any of the video where he talks about it.
No.
Because of the way he talks about it. But it's a suit that is, they're arguing over $450,000 in damages because it was a suit raised by Mitchell who said that Jobs YouTube videos about him cheating at Donkey Kong were defamation. A grown man made a video about another grown man cheating at Donkey Kong. And now it's a $450,000 defamation case. And another gamer had his own farts used in court as evidence. Not even making this up. That is, there you go. Now, if you think that your family, what you got to deal with at Thanksgiving is bad, you could be, that one of these guys could be it. I'm just saying, you know. A Florida man is wanted for stealing money from a tip jar because he's a loser. From a Florida establishment. It's a guy who stole money from a tip jar at a Fort Myers establishment. He literally, grabbed it on camera, $600, and left. He just took $600 and left. White t-shirt, white cap, blue shorts, blue shoes. He's got identifiable tattoos. They're still looking for him. You're supposed to call Crime Stoppers. Nobody cares. Do you think people care that there's surveillance cameras? Or they're so ubiquitous that people just don't care anymore? Is that why?
I think it's more they don't care anymore.
I mean, I don't know. It just... Okay, let's see here. So this guy, a Florida man, is busted because he tried to run over kids waiting for the school bus.
No.
They said it was a bizarre and harrowing scene, said deputies. Lake County, Florida, a man was arrested Friday morning. The Lake County Sheriff's Office says it was a bizarre and harrowing scene at a school bus stop. They tried to run over kids at a bus stop in an area of Mill Street. The man then allegedly went to a nearby location where he had grabbed and attacked a female teen as she walked to her bus stop. 59-year-old Arthur James Young was finally apprehended. And all the parents were just in hysterics. One of the women, Vivian Little, said her son Akeem called and said that someone just tried to run him over. He's a crazy dude. He's just trying to run everybody over and chasing everybody. Lord. So they were all running for their lives. This poor kid's like crying on the phone to his mom. Like, he's coming at me. Can you imagine? So then he was in a black Dodge Ram pickup. And he actually grabbed one girl and tried to choke her. And so they said that the police responded. There was a concealed carry permit holder, apparently, who fired a gunshot to try to stop the attack, fired a round to try to stop it. Just wild. This is just so he's being charged with aggravated assault, child abuse, kidnapping, and several other charges. I need a break after that story. Good night. He's like slapping and choking everybody.
I'm reading ahead on the story. It says here that the sheriff say they've had interactions with him before. And you apparently think? The mom has known him for a long time. That was like some information to hide in the story where at the end.
Yeah. I really want to read this story, but I just don't know. It's about a Florida inmate, Kane.
Oh, I know which one you're talking about. Well, we only have about 30 seconds here.
Okay, 29-year-old Daisy Link and this other, this guy, Joan DePaz, they were inmates at Turner Guilford Knight Correctional Center. And apparently they're facing murder charges. Essentially, she's the Florida inmate is pregnant. She says she's a miracle baby. And she says that the conception happened through an air vent from a fellow prisoner. And I'm going to leave it there. We're just going to be done with Florida Man right now. I made mention earlier about the pendulum maybe perhaps swinging the other way. I wanted to play audio soundbite 9 for you because this is the Walmart, the CEO of Walmart. They are rolling back their DEI policies, believe it or not. And they're just the latest U.S. company to do this. Listen to this.
First, let me say, like many companies all across the United States, we've been on a journey and we continue to be on a journey. And what we're trying to do is to ensure that every customer, every associate feels welcome here to shop and to feel like they belong. And that term belong, we've been talking about belonging now for almost 2 years. Early 2023, we started talking about belonging. And we're going to continue to make the best decisions we can that makes everyone, our customers, our associates, feel like this is an environment they can shop in.
So this is me as CEO. I don't give a rat's ass about belonging. Just buy our stuff. And scene. That's it. That's the quote. That's it. It's all you sell things. You don't have to affirm anything for anyone. Can you imagine someone going to a Walmart and looking at the products? I don't know. I'm looking at these bags of dog and cat food, and I just don't know if they affirm how I choose to get it on in my private life. I just don't know. I just don't feel like it's affirming me because it's a product. It's a product. It doesn't have to affirm you, Cynthia. It does not have to affirm anything. You're making a purchase. That's it. I hate this. Like, they said that they've removed some product, like chest binders for kids. Can't even believe that was the thing that they had or had to take out. They're not going to extend the Racial Equity Center, which I don't even know what that is. And it launched in 2020. They're going to ditch the terms in Kane and Juan, who are basically white adjacent. They hate these terms. Like, they bristle if you say Latinx. Oh, God. They don't even want the letters D and E and I at all together. Nope. No more. And they're going to focus on the term belonging. Why do you have to focus on any term? Why? I feel like, you know, Elmo, when he gets real excited, or Kermit the Frog, when he's dancing for Christmas and he just gets really excited. I feel like that. Why does there have to be any term? Why do you have to? Who did this? I mean, I get it. They're getting away from it. But do you have to give someone the crutch of a term? Right? You see what I mean? Why do you have to have a belonging? What? What's about belonging? You know who belongs here? Anyone who's got money to buy your products. What? Belonging. What? That's how that works. I didn't know that, did you? Why are you here at the Walmart? That's what the Walmart greeter should ask. Excuse me, why are you here? I might buy some of your stuff. Okay, you belong. Yep. Right? That's how that works. So what gets me is, so now they have John Deere, Ford, other companies. The Caterpillar company? Mm-hmm. Caterpillar. Mm-hmm. Kane. What do the Caterpillar people do again?
The heavy construction equipment.
Oh, heavy construction equipment. Yeah. Why do they have to have DEI stuff?
That is a great question. I think we know the answer is they don't. They don't need it.
I mean, who was like, well, let's see. We here at Caterpillar, we make big, heavy construction equipment. We got to start using these phrases, Latinx, and start doing all this stuff. What? I feel like if you're focusing on that, then you're not focusing on making your stuff. So they're doing DEI changes. They're requiring that all corporate training be oriented to focus on business operate because it wasn't before. What? That's amazing to me. Yeah. So they're bringing in an external speaker to talk to the Caterpillar employees, the Caterpillar people. And now they got to have approval from senior VPs who make sure speakers are vetted, et cetera, et cetera. They must have had some humdingers before if they got to go through all that. It's amazing to me that everything, like Coors and Ford, they ended their participation in the, and this is a long one, Human Rights Campaign Corporate Equality Index. What is that, Dana? What is the Human Rights Campaign Corporate Equality Index? Well, that is the annual survey and report used to measure, quote, policies, practices, and benefits pertinent to lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, LGBTQ plus employees. I don't even know what any of that means. All I heard was blah, 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 blah. That's all I heard. Actually, I understood myself just then better than I did with us. Yeah. Yeah, I guess that that's like the behavioral thing. Have you seen that with they have their criteria. It's a roadmap and benchmarking tool for businesses. And I guess they give you a score. You get points, inclusive benefits, things like that. Apparently you get alphabet benefits. I don't even know what that means. What are alphabet benefits do you get? Supporting an inclusive culture, 25 points possible. What about shutting up and not being annoying? How many points do you get for that? Wondering. Corporate social responsibility. This kind of goes on to, you know, the stuff that we talked about, like, why is it that out of all of the charging stations that we had, how much was it? $7 billion, something like that, allocated to spend on it, and we only got two of them built? And that's because and this is a true thing, you had to give the government could only consider contracts from businesses that I guess had one of these, like a specific score, and they checked all of these identity politic boxes. So, well, if you're like a regular lesbian and you are up against a one-armed lesbian, then guess what? The one-armed lesbian is going to get the contract and you're not. If you're a lesbian and you're up against a dude who says that he's a woman, guess what? The lesbian loses. It's the dude who says he's a woman. Why? Because he checks a bigger identity politic box than you do. See, like that's the stuff. And then you had to have like translators and have all this stuff in your business that had nothing to do with your business. You're literally building a charging station. Why do you have to put on like community events? You're a company that builds charging stations. Companies don't need to put on community. You need to demonstrate your community, your social responsibility. You need to STFU. No, this is so dumb. Golly, belonging. How many times did he say that word in that clip? There's a few. Yeah, there's a few times. I mean, it was almost like a call to action, right? Good night. I don't know. But so you got General Motors, Ford. That's the other one that's they're dropping out. Oh, speaking of car companies. So the New York Times is claiming that automakers want Trump to keep EV mandates. But apparently that's not true. New York Times ran this story saying, oh, yes, they're having a coordinated lobbying push to convince POTUS, POTUS-elect, to maintain all these climate rules forcing these EV purchases. But apparently that's not exactly true, according to the Free Beacon. Because Stellantis said that, yeah, we're not pushing for any of this stuff. They completely contradicted the New York Times report. They said, and the New York Times said that Stellantis was actually going to lobby the Trump administration to keep these mandates. And Stellantis said, that's a lie. Stellantis told Free Beacon, we absolutely are not doing that. That is a lie. They said, we are not amongst the lobbyists and all these people from these car companies, if there is one that's pushing for this. No one's buying the damn things. If you want an EV, you know, to fart around with, fine. Nobody cares. But don't force all of us to get EVs. They're ugly cars. They're ugly, ugly, ugly. Golly, they're so ugly. It kills my soul. Oh, my gosh. I see them, and it's like everything about modernity that I hate. Soulless design. They all look like those Eva bots from WALL-E. They all look like that. They all look the same, right? It's some Stepford Wife stuff. Everybody's got their Stepford Wife EV. It's one of the reasons why I like, oddly enough, the Cybertruck, because it's a giant middle finger. It's literally shaped like a child's imagination. And it's brutalist, and it's kind of ugly and completely ridiculous. And is it aerodynamic? I think there's questions. But it's so ridiculous, it actually mocks modernity in a way, doesn't it? At least that's my interpretation of it, right? Yeah. It goes a lot deeper than a banana duct taped to a wall. Just saying. Nobody's buying these cars, though. And whenever I would have to get, if I had to take my car to the shop and I would have to get, they always try to give you an EV. Oh, man, and I'm a brat. They know when I'm coming through the door, like, oh, my gosh, do not give this woman an EV loaner because she hates them and she will complain for every second that she's in this office. Oh, my gosh, because I can't stand them. I can't. It's weird, Kane. I'm just saying. I don't care. I don't really care about any of this stuff. All oil and gas is renewable. It's renewable and it's great. It's a great, plentiful, affordable energy in the United States without convincing of federal mandates. We've already been coming up and pioneering clean, environmentally respectful extraction methods before anybody else ever did. Before anybody in government thought of it, we were already doing it. You know why? Because we like to maintain the business, right? You know that if you're just damaging the earth and you're not taking care of stuff and you're just, you know, sloppy extraction, all this stuff, you're not going to have much to work with in the future. And so it's all about, you know, prolonging, and it's about, you know, making sure that, you know, you have an industry and you're not just destroying everything to the point where you can't have one anymore. They did that. They didn't have to have the government pressure them to do that. The government comes in and acts like it scored something. Oh, look, we're going to pressure these people to do exactly what they're already doing. Well, I mean, some of the stuff actually makes it to where your cars are more fuel inefficient, which is a whole other issue. But nobody people aren't wanting these EVs. Stellantis is like, we ain't lobbying for nothing. We're not doing nothing.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
It can stop this. They're saying forecasts are warning of possible winter storms across the country during Thanksgiving week. Stop it. It's going to be 80 degrees in Texas tomorrow. It's 60 degrees today. It's absolutely frigid. This is just Arctic. It's frigid. 60 degrees. It's when the far comes on. 80 degrees tomorrow. My head's going, what's happening? Everyone's sinuses are like, why does nature hate us? So they said that another round of wintry weather could complicate travel. And talking about snow, apparently in Montana, they're already getting snow. That's crazy. You guys are all, I don't know, man. I can't. I like to look at it, you know, maybe like touch it, and then I'm done. Finished. Finitoed. Can't handle it anymore. It's too cold. It's like I can't. Also, let's see. New York's meatpacking district is going to say goodbye to its last meatpacker, and a 60-story tower could be on the way. That's like now like the really arty, bougie. It's been like that for the last 20 years, a real arty place. Are they going to call it meatpacking anymore? I mean, if they're the last, because that's where all the meat used to go. Now it's like all luxury, high-end stuff and clubs and all this. But yeah, that's where actually all the people went to pack meat, and they called it the meatpacking district for a reason. And now it's just, now it's all like bougie and offices and everything else. So the last one is, that's kind of sad. I don't know why, but that, you know, because nobody's, I mean, pretty soon they're going to call it something different. Butterball is facing, oh boy, is facing a Thanksgiving turkey boycott. Course, as discussing sex abuse allegations resurface, it's slaughterhouse workers torturing and sexually abusing turkeys. Wow. PETA. I don't dislike PETA, but I think they go way over the top with stuff. But they launched an investigation into Butterball's Ozark, Arkansas location, and they said that they were, torturing them. They weren't, you know, they would. I can't tell you everything that they did, but you probably have an idea. I just find that to be heinous. That's heinous. Like, we don't need to do that. I like eating meat. Don't try to, like, make me hate you and make me not want to eat your turkeys. Quit. You know, just be nice. You can still work with animals and be nice. You can still prepare them for slaughter and be nice, right? It's like the Patrick Swayze Roadhouse mantra. Be nice. Because these people make me want to not be nice. And our brains love taking shortcuts with everything. Because we're lazy. We're a lazy species. We are. Coming up, we got a lot more on the way. The story of socialism's failure, which led ultimately to the first Thanksgiving. We're going to get into that. Alec Baldwin says that that we're ignorant people. Americans are an ignorant people. So it's Thanksgiving Eve. And one of the things that I always like to go through when I homeschooled my kids up until junior high, this is one of the lessons that we looked at every single Thanksgiving, and it's based on the writings of William Bradford, who was the governor of Plymouth. And as you know, that was like the first big I guess, colony that was being established here in the United States. And I had said before we went to break that the United States, actually, the society here was, it was actually started by failed socialists who really horribly failed. And they had tried, they tried socialism. There was extensive historical writing on this from William Bradford, who was the governor at the time, who talked about all of this. When they first came to the New World, and this was like in 1620, you know, yes, they were fleeing religious persecution, but they also wanted to get away from the old world and create something new. And so that is where the Plymouth Colony, that's how that came to be. And they were big adherents of Plato's Republic, and they wanted the ideal communism that they, you know, claim was found in the Republican, which is ironic. But they said that, you know, in the beginning when they were all establishing this colony, that they would not have either private property. They would not have any sort of self-interested, you know, gain, nothing like that. And the diary of the governor at the time, who was the head of the colony, he noted that the colonists collectively cleared and they worked the land. And they said, however, they ran into a problem, because you would think, you know, no one's going to own everything. It's going to be kittens and sunshine, hold hands and sing, kumbaya, hippies, yay. And that it was going to be, you know, perfect little glorious society. And it wasn't. It was absolute hell. And Bradford noted at the time that as they were collectively clearing the land and working the land, that they, quote, brought forth neither the bountiful harvest hoped for nor a spirit of shared and cheerful brotherhood. And there's a reason why. In every society, you have people who want to work and you have people who don't work. And the people who do not work, there might be some different reasons, but in a lot of it, I think that there, in some respects, and I think that the people who don't work because of some kind of, you know, illness or something, anything. That's the exception to this rule. There are a lot of people, and this is all how I define all of progressivism, that are just lazy. They're lazy. They don't want to work. They want to be taken care of. They think that the point of government is to take care of them. And they first got the taste of this in this Plymouth colony. The less industrious, Bradford noted, members of this colony, they would come to work in the fields late. They were slow and easy in their labors, he noticed, because they knew they didn't have to work hard. They did not have to exert as much effort as they would have to had they were they were forced to rely upon their own labor. They knew that they and their families, no matter what kind of effort they put into work in the land, they and their families were going to get an equal share of everything, whatever the group produced. So where is the incentive to be more diligent in your effort when you're going to get an equal share regardless? And the colonists that showed up on time or early and worked hard and stayed late, they began feeling incredibly resentful of the less industrious bunch of colonists who did not want to work. They were mad that their efforts would be redistributed to their lazy neighbors. So then they lost their incentive. So they started coming in late, and they were less energetic in clearing the fields and working the land. Bradford noted in his diary, quote, "For the young men that were able and fit for labor and service did repine that they should spend their time and strength to work for other men's wives and children without recompense. The strong or men of parts had no more division of food, clothes, etc., than he that was weak and not able to do a quarter the other could. This was thought injustice. The aged and graver men to be ranked and equalized in labor and food, clothes, etc., with the meaner and younger sort, thought it some indignant and disrespect unto them. And for men's wives to be commanded to do service for other men as dressing their meat or washing their clothes, they deemed it a kind of slavery. Neither could husbands brook it." So they had resentment. They immediately fostered not brotherhood, but resentment. They de-incentivized hard work. And if you can imagine, the harvest was sparse and meager. They had to ration equal shares, and it was not enough that first winter to ward off starvation and death. They were only at this barely 2 years, and they realized they had to do something else. They could not go through another winter where they were starving to death and burying people, because even though the resources were aplenty, no one wanted to do the work. So what they did is they tried something completely new. Instead of the hippie kumbaya handholding stuff, they thought, why not allow people an allotment of land? And then from that allotment, they would keep whatever they put into it. So they introduced something radically different to the colony. Again, this was barely after 2 years, barely 2 years. They introduced private property and the right of families to keep the fruit of their own labor. Bradford, in his diary, wrote, "And so assigned to every family a parcel of land according to the proportion of their number for that end. And this had very good success, for it made all hands very industrious, so as much more corn was planted than otherwise would have been by any means the governor or any other could use, and saved him a great deal of trouble and gave far better content. The women now went willingly into the field and took their little ones with them to suck corn, which before would allege weakness and inability, whom to have compelled would have been thought great tyranny and oppression," end quote. So the first harvest that they had introduced private property, Bradford noted in his diary that the Plymouth colony, they had a bounty of food. They were trading with each other. They had their own little commerce. Not only did they have so much food, they had more food than they knew what to do with. Industry was the order of the day. There was dignity in what they were doing. They weren't having to get a handout from their fellow man. They were all equal in their ability to create or produce or contribute. And they got to keep the fruits of their labor and bless other people that may have struggled with one thing or another. And so when harvest time came, Bradford noted that they had surpluses. And they all began trading with each other. He writes, quote, "By this time harvest was come, and instead of famine, now God gave them plenty, and the face of things was changed, to the rejoicing of the hearts of many, for which they blessed God, and the effect of their planting was well seen, for all had, one way or another, pretty well to bring the year about, and some of the abler sort and more industrious had to spare and sell to others, so as any general want or famine hath not been amongst them since to this day." They rejected the socialist utopia, which interestingly is Latin for something that doesn't exist, for actual real world individualism. And he said that what they had tried, because the Greeks had promised that you could achieve a paradise through collectivism as opposed to being an individual. And Bradford was like, you know, that this has been tried sundry years. And they may well convince of the vanity and conceit of Plato's and other ancients. He said that the taking away of property, bringing commonwealth, would make them happy and flourishing. And he said, but that was not to be. And they realized that this kind of approach is incompatible with the human spirit. It's charity is not compulsory. There, you can't force people to do it. That takes away the spirit of charity. It takes away the dual purpose of it. And Bradford concluded with, "Let none object, this is man's corruption, nothing to the cure itself." And he said, "God in his wisdom saw another course fitter for them," talking of the colonists. They chose to bless other people. They chose individually of their own volition to help others and engage in trade and do all of this. That is the animating spirit of liberty. And it's a difficult thing. If you could bottle it and sell it, that'd be great. It's a difficult thing to catch because there are people who want to be taken care of. there are people in this country who think that by being citizens of this country, that you already are, you're somehow like a ward of the state. And there is risk and freedom. And that's the beauty of freedom, because there's also comebacks in freedom.
Thanks for tuning in to today's edition of Dana Lash's Absurd Truth Podcast. If you haven't already, make sure to hit that subscribe button on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.